Welcome to Resounds, Arts and Culture on the High Plains. I'm Corby Skinner.
And I'm Anna Page. And we're sharing stories of creative people who live and work in the Intermountain West.
This year marks the 50th anniversary of the Montana State University Billings Powwow.
Joining us in the studio to discuss this annual tradition are Reno Charette, director of the Native American Achievement Center, Brennan Shasarek, intern at the center, and Ashler Bear Crane, MSUB's Intertribal Indian Club president. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us here.
The MSU Billings Powwow is one of the biggest student-led American Indian events in the Northwest. I love the fact that students put it on, which I think is so exciting. So all the Montana tribes are invited, as well as nations from Wyoming, North Dakota, and Canada. How do you reach out to all those people, and what are your expected returns in terms of the number of people showing up?
We reach out through Facebook. That helps us a lot. We send out posters to all the high schools in Montana, all the tribal governments and tribal colleges, so that helps. But it also helps that we're on the Montana College circuit, so people are expecting that we will have our powwow the early part of April. We've had 50 years to train our community that we have our powwow at that time.
And this is the 50th anniversary, so what are some of the highlights of the event? What are you most looking forward to?
One of the things I'll be doing is putting on a basketball tournament for 7th and 8th graders, boys and girls.
Oh yeah, Brennan, as the intern, you've got your hands in a lot of different things. What brought about this basketball tournament?
Well, it's a good way to, first of all, raise some money for the department. It's a way to keep the kids busy when there's a lot going on for adults. This gives the kids something to do and maybe parents to come watch. And basketball is a tradition. Native Americans have been playing basketball for a long time and love the sport and gives them something fun to do.
And Ashler, let's talk about your role as the Intertribal Indian Club's role in this.
I mean, it's still pretty new to me. This is my last semester of college, so I figured I'd try and jump in and help wherever I can. And so that's just, you know, getting people together, try to get people to volunteer and try to help out any way they can with the powwow. We still have a lot of spots to fill. So,
what activities have you been planning or are you most looking forward to?
Mostly just enjoying the powwow with my family, you know, having my kids there, having my wife there.
I'm interested, Asher and Brennan, are you guys dancing this year? Are you participating or are you just on the organization side?
You know, my kids, well, my daughter dances, and so she's the only one that dances. You know, my boys don't really dance, but I'm trying to get them into that.
And I also do not dance, but more so just the organization stuff and just being helpful. I'm also about to graduate from college, so this gives me an opportunity to learn some stuff about the other side of it.
And Brennan, you're compiling a history of powwows for the event. Can you speak on how powwows and the MSUB powwow started?
Well, powwows in general are a place to unite and gather for Native Americans. In the beginning, powwows were more so for medicine men and stuff like that, but as it's become more generalized, in about 1920, there was a breakthrough in intertribal powwows, as far as that goes. And as far as the MSUB powwow, it's just a great way to give Native American students the chance to teach other races how our powwow works, how we can unite as a university and bring some unity to the campus.
Speaking of MSU, Reno, how many students are enrolled at MSU Billings, Native students, and from what tribes?
Gosh, almost every tribe you can think of attends our college, but the majority will be Crow, Cheyenne, and students from Fort Belknap. Our enrollment doesn't have the dips in it that the rest of the student body experiences. So we're usually at 300 students pretty steadily.
Well, and you opened up the Native American Achievement Center this spring. How has that been received by the campus?
it's been received very well. The problem with getting more people there is that they have to be at classes, and we advocate that very much so. The students enjoy the building the most at night. We have a class every Thursday for women to come and learn how to make dance regalia for themselves or their children. And while we're doing that on the first floor, we have young men on the second floor learning to drum and sing. And sometimes we have people in the living room talking about political issues that are important to us and to raise awareness of the number of missing and murdered Indigenous women in this continent.
This has been something that you've been working on for well over a year now. Starting with the fall semester last year, you had Louise Edrick Roundhouse. She was featured at the Big Read, as well as a film series centered on missing and murdered Indigenous women. And Reno, you've also spoken out about the history of sexual assault and missing and murdered Indigenous women in North America. What changes have you seen in the way that these issues are talked about and dealt with since really focusing in?
I think that it helps our young women and our young people feel comfortable with the language and that experience of saying it out loud, because for too many years these issues have been hidden, and the secrets that the perpetrator and the victim hold in regard to these issues. So I see more people speaking out, and that's a good thing, is being able to talk about it comfortably.
And as part of this upcoming powwow, you'll also have a dress exhibit that is part of this Save Our Sisters campaign.
We're very fortunate that Marita Growing Thunder, a student at the University of Montana and a former high school student from Polson, is willing to bring 12 of her dresses. She has many more than that. There's a lot of publicity regarding her effort as a senior in high school, where she made a new dance dress every night and still did her schoolwork. And every day that she went to school, she was dressed in full Native regalia as a way to raise awareness of the high numbers of missing and murdered Indigenous women. What an awesome young lady she is. So when I asked for the 12 dresses, I spoke to her as an artist, and I fully expected some sort of protocol involved in the shipping of the dresses and how they would be handled and how she would want them exhibited. Her response was, "I will personally bring them." I about fell off my chair. I was so delighted. So it's really changed up some of our activities and planning, and we'll be adding a meet and greet with Marita at the powwow.
I had the chance to speak with Marita Growing Thunder by phone. She's in Bozeman studying at Montana State University and the founder of Save Our Sisters. During her senior year at Polson High School, she made and wore a dress each day to represent murdered and missing Indigenous women. Several of her dresses will be on display during the upcoming powwow. So let's talk about this project. Tell me where it came from and what you experienced in that time making those dresses.
Well, I started this project when I went to the Center for Creative Youth, which is an arts summer program for high school students. And I went into the music program. I really love music, but they wanted each student to create their own project and to kind of advocate for their own art style and whatever they wanted to bring out to the public. And so I felt like, I don't know, I tried with music, tried different ideas, different projects, but I felt like it didn't really suit me that well. And so I kind of dug into Indigenous art. And I grew up knowing about missing and murdered Indigenous women since it's so prevalent within my family. And so I kind of use Indigenous art as a way to kind of speak about it, you know, comfortably for once. It's really hard to put it into words, but I feel like right now the dresses speak for me. Sewing in general is a task you do for people you love. And when you sew, you put yourself in what you create, and you kind of tell your own story with your beads and your fabrics. And, you know, there's all these textiles that sort of speak for you. And so in a way, I just kind of want to talk about how much these women are loved rather than just the numbers behind them.
Now, it makes me wonder about how your project was received just recently at the university, where several of your dresses were displayed outdoors, just on empty chairs. Just thinking of that creates a powerful visual. Tell me a bit about that project.
I don't know. I do things whether or not anybody's going to look at them or not. If people are going to be offended by what I do, I just take it as, well, at least somebody's listening. And so with that, I went out onto the Oval on Valentine's Day. It's like a day that people use to celebrate love and, you know, love for other people. And so I just felt like this is how much she is loved, is that I'm willing to put myself this out here.
As an artist, you have a lot of vulnerability when you put any of your creative endeavors into the world. And you're taking it a step further by aligning it with an issue that isn't talked about as much as it should be. And I'm wondering why that is. Why do you think we are not ferociously angry about the issue of missing and murdered Indigenous women in this country?
Because I believe we live in selfish times. That's honestly how I feel. I know it may not sound the very best, but within modern American culture, there is this, we often think of ourselves far too often. When you are really passionate about something, I feel like the others who are passionate as well will drop their veil of self-serving, and change can really happen with that.
In speaking with Reno, she discussed the experience of saying it out loud is very empowering, that this is happening. This happens to people that you know, to your family, because for too many years it's been hidden, and that with more people speaking out, it's creating a more comfort in being able to talk about it. Do you find a similar experience when you share?
First of all, I feel like wearing the dresses kind of not gives me an alter ego, but it kind of like gives me more confidence in who I am as a person. It gives you a voice as well. I feel like when one person chooses to speak out, it really makes others a little bit more comfortable talking about their own battle with this, especially with this crisis.
I'm just totally inspired by your drive to create this organization in high school, Save Our Sisters. Tell me a little bit about what's happened with Save Our Sisters.
Well, right now we are working to turn it into an official nonprofit, but right now I'm still in the awareness phase, but I would really like to start fundraising to find lawyers and private investigators and to at least get the funds together to help, you know, fund search parties or funerals, scholarships, just to serve the people.
From an artistic standpoint, with these dresses that are going to be on display at the powwow, you're bringing 12 dresses to Billings?
Yes, I believe so. Each one is usually dedicated to a woman so I don't ever do anything in regards to other missing and murdered Indigenous women from other families. I don't ever do anything without their permission. Their names are used with the consent from the family. So it's either somebody who's missing or murdered. And it includes both Indigenous girls and trans women. From my standpoint, as an Indigenous person, culturally trans women are just women. And that population in modern America is often overlooked. Oftentimes, trans women face even higher rates of crime than those of cisgender Indigenous women.
So by dedicating a dress to each person, it really kind of gives them a voice without them being here anymore. That's a beautiful gift.
Yeah, it's... You definitely feel it when you're in the room with them. Each skirt is very spiritual. I grew up knowing that, or learning that skirts connect you to the earth. They're kind of like your teepees, and how teepees are on the ground with our mother, who is the earth. So that's how I felt when I made the skirts, is that, you know, it's another way to connect to these women when you cannot talk to them anymore. You know, it's also very healing.
You, I imagine, felt this in creating them, and in turn, the viewer is able to interpret their own take from it. But I have no doubt the power and it's stitched into them is it's heavy for you. How did you make as many dresses as you did?
All the materials, most of them are donated from families across the continent as well as around the world. And that's kind of how I did it physically, but emotionally it's a lot. You know, waking up and you have to look at that skirt and you wear it, you know, when you're like in your pajamas looking at it, it's kind of, you want to wear it, but you kind of don't because you carry that feeling with you wherever you go. And then when you wear it, you kind of feel like, oh my gosh, this issue is way bigger than me.
How many dresses in total have you made?
I have no idea, probably hundreds. Mm. But a lot of them have gone to families of these women. Some of them I chose not to share just for the emotional comfort of these families. Yeah, it's a big issue. And there's this one family who had asked me to make a skirt for their daughter. And they were scared that when I spoke her name, that something bad would happen to me because her killer is still out there. And so there's always this other fear that, oh my gosh, I'm Indigenous and I'm also a woman. I don't know, there's underlying feeling that like, oh my gosh, I could be attacked at any second. Like, missing and murdered Indigenous women can happen to anybody. It could be anybody you know who is Indigenous.
Wow, that's a very intense realization. Given all of the emotional investment that you have in this, why continue?
Because nobody else will. I feel like, why not in these situations? I have originally, for the dresses on the oval, I wanted to spray paint them at the bottom, black at the end, just kind of to symbolize that Indigenous women will rise from the ashes. You know, we can not necessarily save ourselves by ourselves, but we will rise as a unit. We can get through this.
You can find out more about the Save Our Sisters campaign on our website, ypuradio.org. Now let's get back to our interview with Reno Charette, Brennan Shaserik, and Ashler Bearcrane of the Native American Achievement Center and their preparations for the upcoming 50th annual MSUB Powwow.
Asher and Brennan, powwows are a real family event. I love the fact that, one, it's open to the public, it's free and open to the public, but I always like attending because you really get to experience Native culture and families. Can you talk a little bit about the whole nature of the family at a powwow?
Well, we live in Crow country, and so, I mean, I have a lot of family. You know, both my parents are Crow, and they usually come to the, you know, MAC Billings powwow.
Did you grow up going to powwows?
Yeah, I did. You know, my mom took me to a lot of powwows, and so it was mostly in California. And, you know, when we came back here, it was, you know, going to Crow Fair and stuff. And
for me, I grew up in a mixed family, both white and Crow. And I did a lot, when I was younger, a lot of traveling back and forth to Crow. And I grew up learning traditions and stuff like that. And unfortunately, my grandfather passed away. And at that point, the only thing I had left was, you know, going to the powwows down in Crow at the Crow Fair. For me, it's a big sense of unity. It allows you to see families you don't see all the time and just gets you closer to the community. It's a good place to catch up and see people you don't always see.
There's also an aspect of powwows that I think a lot of people don't know. It's not just about dancing and drumming. Isn't there always an honoring ceremony as a part of the powwow? Rena, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, there can be, and I deliberately plan those in to our powwows so that our educational community will get to see the fabulous way that tribes honor other people. A couple years ago, we did an adoption. We adopted Jeffrey Sanders into my family. So he was my boss, and now he's my brother, and he's my older brother, and he likes to remind me of that, that superiority that he has. We've had first dance ceremonies, the children of our students making their first dance, and the process of their welcoming into the dance circle. So we've done that. This year, it's all about celebrating 50 years of existing here at EMC, now MSUB. And to do that, I've done some real creative things with connecting our curriculum to the activities of the powwow. We have poetry classes and statistic classes, Native American studies classes, doing homework assignments that are somehow attached to what they see at the powwow. So we're going to collect all those pieces of work, and following the powwow, they will be uploaded to a blog. And the community will get to see the artwork and the assignments and the writing that students do connected to the powwow. But even the leadership is connected to our curriculum. It takes 13 student leaders. They each will have a staff under them and 200 volunteers to get through 2 days of this powwow.
Yeah, volunteers are critical to the success of the event. What ways have volunteers inspired and surprised you?
CASA of Yellowstone County has stepped forward to help us bag up all the goodies that we give to elders, drummers, and tiny tots. So we're having a bagging party on March 30th. We try to make the work fun and exciting and ways for people to meet each other.
So, Eschler, how many drum groups do you expect to be at this powwow?
There's quite a bit. It's going to be quite a bit of drum groups. So 16 drums, 160 drummers, give or take.
For someone who's never been to a powwow, can you describe the scene?
Yeah. I mean, you have the drums, you know, around the dancing arena, I guess you would say. Here we'll have it at the gym, the basketball gym. And so of the drummers on the, you know, on the outside. And, you know, the way it's set up, you know, we have our elders sitting on the floor, so, you know, they have spots to sit. You know, we serve them, you know, with food and drinks and gifts. We have a spot for our grandmas with grandkids and stuff. And that's kind of nice, you know, to have their own little seating area. And the rest is mostly just open seating.
Can you tell us a little bit about the various dance competitions that go on during a powwow?
Yeah, we have men's traditional, men's fancy, and men's grass dance. And, you know, for the women, it's we have traditional and jingle dress and fancy as well.
I'm interested in how the attire has evolved and changed. I'm imagining all of the colors and materials showing up in different ways. Tell us what the difference between traditional and fancy is.
Well, traditional is more related to the style of clothing that we would have worn at when our culture was still free of colonial oppression. in the buffalo days and the teepee days, the women wear a lot of clothing, leggings, moccasins, and long dresses with long sleeves. The men in their traditional attire may wear leggings if they're of that style, or in a crow style, they don't wear leggings. Men wear feather bustles and bells. Women don't necessarily wear the same kind of bells. In the fancy dance outfit, that's where we can take advantage of global economy and finding fabrics from all over the world. The shinier, the brighter color, the better. So you could find fabrics imported from Spain, from Asia. Doesn't matter.
So this is where the men get to be the peacocks at the powwow. Mm-hmm. The fancy dance is unbelievable in terms of the color. And then what they use. I mean, I'm always so surprised with the fluorescent colors and the patterns. It's just so beautiful and very contemporary.
It is. And the way they're put together is also just incredible. I call it ingenuity. They can take an empty pill box and cut the end out of it and turn it into something they need to support feathers on the spreader within the roach, or use a CD turned over so that the iridescent colors help the bustle lay out flat and fan out. So as a dancer myself, it's always interesting as I dance behind others to see how creative they are in putting the materials together. My Lord, if anybody ever took a big magnet out there, you'd see how much of us was put together with safety pins. The audience doesn't see that part, but we know it's there.
Sounds like it's going to be quite a beautiful display. And you've also coordinated MC's Christian Parrish, a.k.a. Superman, and Casey Nicholson, who is a Native American comedian.
Oh, I think that's going to be a tag team show from the moment they open their mics until we end the evening. We're looking forward to a lot of joking and bantering and getting our audience just stirred up.
Well, we will have information on our website, ypradio.org, about the 50th MSUB powwow that is being held on April 6th and 7th on the campus of Montana State University, Billings. Thank you so much for being in the studio and sharing a bit about this. We very much look forward to seeing it.
Thank you for having
us.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
You've been listening to Resounds, Arts and Culture on the High Plains, produced by Anna Page, Corby Skinner, and Ken Siebert for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music by Alex Naumann. Hear this program anytime online at ypradio.org.